Hello and welcome to a week 7 edition of the quote unquote expert quote unquote round table. My name is Adam Levitan. I'm the father of Jerry, the most beautiful beast in the world. As always, I am joined by the man, a proprietor of his own business, the peak of capitalism. It is, of course, fake hippie, JM DeWin.
What's up, man? Fun to be hanging out. Fun to be on Friday night. Fun to be on 1 week season. Yeah, we're no producer again this week. So thanks for bearing with our beautiful faces with no cool graphics applied. We'll have it looking sharp again next week. Adam, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, bud. I feel like this was going to be a good slate. Maybe it still will be, but a lot of the late news coming in, which we're going to talk through, I think is going to suck up a lot of ownership to the point where if I feel like people, a very similar line of construction is going to happen, and we'll obviously get into that as we go along here. What was your thought on the slate before the Theoretic / Carlos Hyde news, and what is your thought on the slate after?
My thought hasn't changed much. We'll get to Chubb. Right now, I'll be surprised if I end up playing him. I'm pretty excited about this news because the things that I like are going to be even lower owned. But before we get started, so obviously we have a lot to talk about, but what I really like about this slate is it's pretty clear roster construction, in my opinion. You know, we've had this kind of classic, each week we've had a sort of a classic one-week season build. So like last week it was just take one of those quarterbacks in the Tampa-Atlanta game, take Julio, take James Conner, take Chester Rogers, and then fill in from there. This week there's three high-priced guys that I think make sense. You can throw in a fourth one. We'll get to all these guys. And you can fit two with a great roster around them. So I think you start there. You start with one particular quarterback that we'll get to, one particular tight end we'll get to, is how I'm looking at the roster. There's five guys that I have locked in this week, and I'm just messing around with the other four spots through Sunday morning. So not a lot has changed for me. Interested to hear your thoughts on Chubb, but yeah, I really like the way the slate sets up. Really straightforward for me. Basically, I have four decisions to make by Sunday morning. And yeah, I think we'll be on a lot of the same guys as far as these high-priced guys we like. But yeah, on a week like this, I mean, there's so many good cheap plays. And they all have question marks, but there's going to be guys in this cheaper range that get you 15 to 20 points. And then you can fit in two or three of these high-priced guys who have 30-point upside. So yeah, I really like this slate a lot. I think it's possible to go different from what other people are doing while still building a great roster, as in not taking suboptimal plays. You have a different take on that, Adam?
I don't know. I mean, I was on news when the Chubb thing happened, and then I had the kids. So I haven't completely thought through and tried to make rosters with Chubb yet, but I do think he'll be very, very popular. I'm going to work on ownership projections as soon as we're done here also. So we'll see. One thing that did stick out to me about the slate is like the teams that are not on it, and we're going to keep seeing this, you know, every week as the flexes happen, as we get into the bye weeks, like Chargers are in London. They're not on the slate. Bengals and Chiefs are not on the slate. Giants and Falcons are not on the slate. Packers and Steelers have a bye. You know, it's like my first thought was just missing so much offensive firepower, and that's going to leave people kind of scraping towards the same guys. Like, you don't have a choice between, say, you know, Gurley and Julio because Julio's not on the slate. You know what I mean? So, like, it makes it so that I think ownership is going to get sucked into a lot of very tight directions. But anyways, we should get into the plays.
Yeah, real quick on that, wanted to note that the contest this week for free one-week season for life is on Fantasy Draft this week. Link is on the homepage at the top. You can always see win free OWS for life. Fantasy Draft has the Sunday night slate, so it's going to be a fun week on there. Totally different roster construction. Also, side note, I got hammered so hard on Twitter last year when I complained about DraftKings and FanDuel taking these Sunday night games off the main slate. But it's like once you get to this point in the season, it makes a big difference, you know, because we're getting the best teams are getting moved out of these, you know, bye weeks going on. We got 10 games on the main slate.
Yeah.
One of the best games is removed. It does make a big difference. So we live with it. We move forward with it, but it is what it is. But yeah, it definitely changes things up for us.
I mean, the problem is that people complain. They don't speak with their wallet. Showdown is like the most popular slate that DraftKings has now. You know what I mean? So like, you can't even blame them from like a business perspective for taking it off and making it Showdown, because like everybody plays it. I mean, people love Showdown. You know what I mean? I haven't really played much, but people love it.
Yeah, people also like when the high dollar contest, whenever the rake goes up, typically high dollar contests, like 6% rake will go up to 10 one week and everyone will complain and then still enter the contest.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, it is what it is.
Okay, let's get to the quarterback position. I think last week it was so clear to both of us that the optimal play was for sure either Ryan or Winston, and it did play out that way where those guys – I believe we're two of the top five quarterbacks at worst. This week, I think you can make a case for a few more guys, or at least to me, there's nobody standing out that's head and shoulders above the rest. Maybe you have a different take. I think the first guy that we should talk about, though, is at the bottom, because C.J. Beathard has put up big numbers continually. I think he's – I mean, I'm no scout, but it looks like he's being so much more aggressive and is playing so much better and with so much more confidence than he did last year. Now he gets a spot against the Rams defense without Aqib Talib, and they've been flamed by quarterbacks. Marcus Peters is near the bottom of every rank for cornerbacks. He does have Marquise Goodwin healthy, which I think makes a big difference. I assume you wouldn't go cheaper than C.J. Beathard, but how do you feel about C.J. Beathard down at 4,800?
I guess I'd be fine with him. So my issue with Beathard would be everything is short. He's still throwing everything short, right? So well, I think the week he threw 54 pass attempts, he had three that traveled more than 15 yards downfield, or maybe it was three that traveled more than 20 yards downfield. I mean, this is like saying Alex Smith is playing the Rams and the Rams are going to throw a ton. I mean, just in terms of the way this quarterback is being used, and obviously good coaching with Kyle Shanahan, they'll be aggressive. But I would prefer, if I'm going to try to get exposure, I'd prefer to get it through Kittle or maybe taking a shot on Marquise Goodwin as opposed to Beathard. I think that you can get 17, 18 points, but I think that there are some guys who can get you 30 points at quarterback for not a whole lot more in price. So currently I don't plan to miss out. I think there's three guys that stand out to me as guys who could potentially get us 30 points, and I'll be looking at them. If I'm going cheap, I do think there's a case to be made for Blake Bortles at 5,200. And I got on that just as a pricing thing where they're, you know, had a lot of rosters where I've needed an extra 100 or I've needed an extra 500 to really fit the guys I want. And there was one where I was able to drop from Baker Mayfield down to Bortles and really get eight other guys that I wanted on that roster. And Bortles obviously lower floor than some of these other guys, but could put up 30 points. I could be wrong on Beathard, but I just don't see him putting up 30 points in this spot. And no, pricing so condensed, I'd rather get up to the guys that have that sort of ceiling.
Yeah, I think the difference for me with Beathard this week versus some of the other quarterback situations that we've talked about is the price is actually significantly different, right? Like Jameis is 63 and Beathard is 48, whereas 1,500 difference, we've talked about it before, difference from the top of the range to the bottom is only like 800 or 1,000 or whatever. Getting the full 1,500 down to Beathard makes sense with the Nick Chubb news. Or Duke Johnson news, or Kerryon news, or however you want to play it. Or if you don't want to play those guys, I don't know. But either way, it feels like more has opened up since I last tried to make a team. So we'll see on that. Let's keep moving up here. You mentioned Baker Mayfield is the best possible spot for a quarterback. Baker Mayfield has struggled badly, really badly. And I think the weight of a lack of weapons may be hurting him. I do think the Damian Ratley kid is maybe better. Then people realize that Antonio Callaway is killing him. He has no chemistry right now with Jarvis Landry. 11 completions on 30 targets. How much do you weight matchup here for Baker Mayfield on the road against Tampa?
I mean, I think it's a little strong to say that Mayfield struggled. I think his expected completion percentage is 64%, which is right in line with what we would expect. I mean, the end result is the same. Just a ton of drops. You brought up Callaway. You brought up the lack of chemistry with Jarvis Landry. What's frustrating me the most about Landry is the way they're using him. And really, if you look at the way that Todd Haley used Antonio Brown, he almost never schemed Antonio Brown open. It was like, go beat your man. This is why the Bengals were able to shut him down for so long with that zone defense. And he's using Jarvis Landry the same way. It's like all these routes over the middle that can hit the Buccaneers defense are not the routes that Landry's been being used on. So I certainly have some concerns there. But, man, this matchup has just produced so many quarterback points. And you look at two things for me. One, the pace at which the Browns are playing. First or second or third in the league in pace. It was first heading into last week. They're top three in pace of play. Super aggressive. Mayfield is second or third in the NFL in average intended air yards. Everything's going downfield. And then the other thing is he's put up points every week. I mean, 16 points, 18 points, 20 points in tough matchups. Like, I'm putting worst case for him still at 18 to 20 points, but he can clearly get you 28 to 30. This is a spot for me where I'm not going to overthink it. The drops are a concern. Ratley had a drop. We'll get to Ratley in a bit. He's actually a player I like, but he had a drop basically in the end zone last week, right inside or right outside. Callaway's a mess. So there are concerns, but man, in this matchup, like what we probably consider Nick Foles in this matchup, right? I think it was a Thursday night game, but like even Foles was viable in this matchup. This is just such a good matchup for quarterbacks. The Mayfield is my favorite play on the slate. I don't imagine that I'll actually move off him. And if he's under like chalk, basically, then that's just a bonus in my mind. But yeah, I'm fine rolling Mayfield here.
Yeah. Well, the hashtag defensive don't matter movement, which has taken hold a bit, would not be playing Baker Mayfield here because defense doesn't matter. Let me ask you this. I rarely play Cam Newton in cash, but I think if you're talking about floors, like Cam Newton's rushing floor against this Eagles team, I know it's extremely difficult to go into Philadelphia. This Eagles defense is just ravaged in the secondary. No Rodney McLeod. Sidney Jones is out now. Darby and Mills are struggling so badly. And yeah, Cam is erratic at times. He hasn't fared well when he's faced Philadelphia over the last few years. But to me, the floor for Cam is right there with Baker Mayfield, if not higher. I assume you disagree.
Let's get this out of the way. I thought about this when we were talking about Beathard. You and I don't really talk about bad plays on this. I mean, we do every once in a while. Typically, I'm the one who brings them up when I overthink things and get off the board. But, like, when I'm saying I don't like a guy, like, we're still talking about guys who are set up well in the slate, right? Like, I don't expect Beathard to fail. I don't expect Cam to fail. These are good plays. But if we're narrowing things down to favorite plays, my concern with Cam would be, so we talk about Darby and we talk about Jalen Mills. Like, Jalen Mills primarily struggles on these double moves. Darby primarily struggles with technique. We're talking about Devin Funchess. Like, Devin Funchess is not putting the skids on Jalen Mills with some sick double moves.
No. But he does have Greg Olsen back. He does have DJ Moore starting to play better. He does have Christian McCaffrey. Like, they have other weapons, and obviously he has major rushing upside.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with it. My other concern in this game is play volume on both sides. But Wentz is one of the guys that I have as like my three quarterbacks. So ultimately, I'm fine with this game. I like Wentz more than Cam just because, last year I hardly ever played Wentz because I'm such a volume guy. And so often Wentz would post 25 to 30 points on 28 pass attempts, 33 pass attempts. But again, that takes the volume concern out of consideration, and I'm fine attacking this Panthers secondary. So, yeah, I would prefer Wentz over Cam in this spot. You disagree with that take?
I like Wentz also. He's certainly on my list too. I probably am a sucker for the funnelish style. Like, I don't think Christian McCaffrey can have any success rushing the football against this Eagles front. So I expect a really pass-heavy game plan. And yeah, I think with the weaponry for Cam, I think I like him a little bit better, but yeah, I certainly like Wentz also. I want to talk about Jameis Winston because dude has been just putting up huge numbers. Cleveland is certainly not the best matchup, but they did lose EJ Gaines. We know Terrence Mitchell is already out, so they really have nothing opposite Denzel Ward at cornerback. This is a home game for Jameis, presumably good weather. He is 6,300 up from 5,800 last week. It's a far cry from the matchup he had last week. But how do you feel about Jameis?
Well, matchups don't matter, right? So Jameis is set in that regard. I haven't given a ton of consideration to Jameis because I want to – and last week was a special circumstance. You know, last week I said I don't want to overthink it and ended up using Jameis on two of my three teams and Matt Ryan on the other. But I didn't use any of Jameis's weapons. I toyed around with Chris Godwin because he set up best in the matchup. And that's the concern is, like, when Godwin's the guy who sets up best in the matchup, or O.J. Howard on these, like, short crossing routes, it's just harder to target because we really want this team for their downfield passing. And this is a tough team to pass downfield on. So I think, like, Mike Evans, first off, Mike Evans is in a really bad spot. Obviously, he has a big size advantage on Denzel Ward, but the way Mike Evans is used is not the way to beat this defense. So he'll get his targets. He'll probably post 70, 80 yards if he gets a touchdown, good game. But it's going to be like DeSean Jackson and O.J. Howard and Godwin that are going to have to move the ball. And then DeSean Jackson's in a tough spot against a team that does well defending the deep ball. Just a lot of question marks on Jameis. I guess if I were saying top five quarterbacks, top six, I'd put him on the list. But I have Mayfield, Wentz, and Kirk Cousins as the guys I'm focused on. Kirk Cousins just in a great spot against the Jets, and Vikings just pass the ball so much that that I would take him over these other guys we've talked about.
Yeah, certainly a good spot for Kirk Cousins. We know three members of the Jets secondary are going to miss this game: Trumaine Johnson, Buster Screen, and Marcus May. And the thing about playing Cousins is, as you said, they skew extremely pass heavy. Even last week, like, the obvious game plan against the Cardinals for everybody is just run the football as much as you possibly can. Kirk Cousins still got it up like 30 to 35 times, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So, I think Kirk Cousins is a good play for sure. I think Jared Goff people are going to play. And then off the board a little bit, I think I've heard people show interest in Joe Flacco in what looks to be, at least this year, a good matchup against the Saints. Do you have any interest in Goff or Flacco?
Goff, I think, has kind of joined the always in play conversation for you and me. Credit to you for being on him a couple times earlier in the year. I always have slim concerns just because of how much Gurley scores close to the end zone. As we've seen this year, that gives him a lower floor than other quarterbacks, but the ceiling is still enormous. So, yeah, Goff's a great tournament play just for the ceiling. Flacco's fine. You know who I actually like more than Flacco is Mitch Trubisky, just because game flow should turn so heavily in favor of the pass. And the way to attack the Patriots defense is with speed. I mean, Tariq Cohen is going to have a spoiler alert, that's the one of the dudes locked onto my roster. Cohen's just going to have a monster game here against these Patriots linebackers. And I think Taylor Gabriel sets up well also. So again, like, you're looking at a lower floor, but if we're just talking tournaments, guys who could post the highest score in the slate, I'll put Mitch Trubisky in there as well. You could say the same thing for Flacco, right? But Flacco's weapons underneath are Crabtree and Snead. It's not like they're catching the ball and just housing a 60-yard touchdown. So it's like, if he doesn't connect with John Brown on these deep balls, then we're going to get a disappointing score from Flacco. I mean, not disappointing, but like, compared to these guys who are going to put up 26, 30 points. So it's like, he has to hit with John Brown to put up a monster score, or three or four touchdown game to put up a monster score. So just a little more guesswork there on Flacco for me.
Anything off the board, or further off the board, I should say, at the quarterback position?
No, but a quick question on that. So you're putting Mayfield's ownership a little bit lower than some of these other guys, and I would guess Trubisky going under-owned as well?
Yeah, I think Trubisky will be somewhere between like 2 to 4% probably, and Mayfield probably like 5 to 8 in that range would be my guess right now. I think Jameis is going to be very popular, and I think Beathard is actually going to be more popular than you think.
Right on. Cool. Appreciate it.
All right. At the running back position, let's just get right to the news. First news that broke today was Theo Riddick is not going to play. Theo Riddick has played a big role for the Lions this season. He's played on like 40% of the snaps. He's run a route on like 60% of Matthew Stafford's dropbacks or something like that. Theo Riddick sees about 6 targets per game. The question, of course, is, as the Lions went into their bye and hopefully did some self-scouting, did they come out saying, we need to get the ball to Kerryon Johnson more, A, and B, if Ameer Abdullah is active Sunday, which I expect him to be, will they use Kerryon Johnson on third downs, or will they use Ameer Abdullah on third downs? Note, Ameer Abdullah has played 0 snaps this entire year. I know there's a lot of questions here. That's why you're laughing. However, Kerryon Johnson is only 4,500. So give me your – it looks like you're getting about to give me an anti-Kerryon Johnson.
No, I'm about to give you an anti-Matt Patricia rant. So, man, when my – Abby's pregnant right now, whenever my kid grows up and he or she asks why the Patriots don't have more Super Bowl wins, I'll show him a picture of Matt Patricia. who Abby loves, by the way, so she'll be upset that I said that. Matt Patricia is such a dolt sometimes. I'm laughing because so Tim Twentyman on Lions.com essentially, like, he didn't come out and say it, but he essentially, like, he broke down what to expect if Theo Riddick misses, and he outlined a scenario in which Ameer Abdullah takes over the Theo Riddick role. So I wrote in the article in the game-by-game breakdown this week that, you know, I know that, like, probably before the Riddick injury, there was going to be some narratives of, hey, maybe Kerryon Johnson gets more touches. And I was like, maybe so. That would make sense. But given what we know about Patricia, that seems unlikely. Given what we know about good coaching, it would make every bit of sense. Like, first off, touches with LeGarrette Blount are wasted touches, 2.5 yards to carry. It's like we're calling this guy some between-the-tackles grinder, but outside of the Patriots, this dude wasn't even good on the goal line for other teams, you know? So would it like surprise us if then they waste passing game touches on Ameer Abdullah? Right now I have Kerryon Johnson on my placeholder team, and I won't be surprised if I go there. I've had him there for a couple days because it sort of started looking like Riddick was going to miss, but I'm terrified of this Kerryon Johnson play. The one thing that elevates it a little for me is that he is getting 2 or 3 catches a game. So even if he doesn't take on this Riddick role, and that's my concern with Chubb, which we can get to in a moment. My concern with Chubb is he could come out of the game with 0 catches, so you need yards and touchdowns. At least Kerryon could get 2 or 3 catches and then maybe get some of these other ones. The flip side of that is Chubb's going to get goal line work and Kerryon Johnson's going to give up goal line work to LeGarrette Blount. So I don't know, man. You have a take on any of that? Let's say Ameer Abdullah plays third downs, right? Because the Lions coaches don't know what they're doing. Then we're looking at 10, 12 points from Kerryon Johnson with maybe a touchdown. What do you think there?
See, the issue is I wouldn't play Kerryon Johnson if Theo Riddick was healthy, right? So if you're just going to slide Ameer Abdullah into that role, then I would not play Kerryon Johnson. However, I don't believe I retweeted that story from 1020man because I thought people should read it, but I don't necessarily believe that Ameer Abdullah is going to go from inactive every week to all of a sudden playing the Theo Riddick role. They've been hesitant in the past to use Ameer Abdullah on third downs before for whatever reason. I mean, Ameer Abdullah, like, they demoted this dude to like fourth. He was playing like the fourth quarter of preseason games. Now you're going to use him in these really high leverage spots like third downs. I think there should have been, hopefully, and I know this is an assumption of rational coaching, self-scouting during the bye week just to realize how much better Kerryon Johnson is than what else they have. So I guess I'm more optimistic on Kerryon Johnson. I guess from a role perspective, I expect Ameer Abdullah to play less than maybe other people are thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I hope you're right, especially if I end up on him. I mean, we talk about assumption of rational coaching. You know, in my somebody texted me last night and said they won a bunch of money on the showdown slate because they faded David Johnson because I essentially recommended that in the game-by-game breakdown, saying teams are going to look at the Broncos and be like, well, the way to beat them is to run, except Mike McCoy was going to look at the Broncos and be like, all right, straight between the guard and center, we're just running the ball. It's like – idiotic coaching remains idiotic coaching. That's my concern is, you know, maybe carry on. So basically, I want to play Kerryon Johnson, but I don't think he's a slam dunk. That scares me a little bit. In this price range, though, not a slam dunk. Like if you get 12 points, that's not killing you. I mean, I'm going to talk about Willie Snead in a bit because he's guaranteed 10 or 12 points you hope for a touchdown, right? Like that doesn't kill you in this price, 4,500. If you get 10 or 12 points and hope for a touchdown, so, yeah, that's my overall take there.
Okay, let's move to the other news of the day, which was the big trade between the Browns and the Jaguars. Browns send Carlos Hyde to the Jaguars in exchange for a 5th-round pick. There's a lot of reports out of Cleveland. The reason they wanted to do this was to get Nick Chubb more work. A lot of speculation from the fantasy community is, well, they also want to get Duke Johnson more work. I don't see what was stopping them before from getting Duke Johnson more work. So I'm a little bit hesitant to say all of a sudden that Duke Johnson is going to play a ton. I know Duke Johnson is your boy. Nick Chubb, by the way, in the preseason, got a lot of volume. Wasn't that impressive, but did get goal line work, punched in a couple of touchdowns. Thought played okay in the pass game, nothing special. But yeah, I don't think he's like inept in the pass game at all. Tell me what you think about this Browns running back situation in the wake of the trade.
Yeah, definitely don't think Chubb is inept in the pass game. I do think that this is not a check down offense. I mean, this team just unleashes. We're talking about all this talk about the air raid Tampa offense, but that is essentially what the Browns are doing as well, unleashing a lot of deep balls. Carlos Hyde's not inept in the pass game either. And I mean, he was getting 4, 5, 6 catches a game last year in San Francisco, and he has been uninvolved in the pass game. So that's my big concern with Chubb. And you bring up a good point. This dude didn't look great in the preseason. Obviously, I mean, Sonny Michel didn't look good in his first NFL start, which was basically his preseason. So those things can change. Players grow. But, yeah, well, I mean, $3,600 is a great price, right?
Right.
But I just have concerns that maybe we see 80 yards, 70, 80 yards, and no touchdown, and then that's your score. Where somebody like Damian Ratley at the same price, because of the nature of the way you attack the Bucs and the nature of the way the Browns play, you're still looking at 7, 8 targets. You know, like the floor is just a little bit higher on a guy like that. Would you have a different take on floor between someone like Ratley and someone like Chubb?
Yeah, I think the floor is better on Chubb. And I like Ratley. I actually wrote about Ratley in my article today, but we're still talking about maybe the third or fourth option in the pass game, depending on how you look at it. And I know this is like the best possible matchup. But yeah, you know, third or fourth option in the pass game versus no doubt starter and goal line back. I think I would take the 15 to 18 touches that I would get from Chubb. And when we're talking about 15 to 18 touches, I don't think you disagree that he's going to get 15 to 18 touches for $3,600. It's just like, man, I will say that the way the Bucs have played a far better rush defense than maybe people realize, and maybe that's a part of the reason their pass defense is so bad, but they will be missing their starting defensive tackle and their starting defensive end in this game. So I think that makes a difference too. You're also a huge Duke Johnson truther. I know people are going to want to play Duke Johnson. Do you see any merits to Duke Johnson? He is 4K, 400 more than Nick Chubb.
Yeah, if we're just talking about like isolating plays, Chubb's a good play. Duke Johnson's a good speculative play. If we're talking about comparing them to what else is available on the slate, then I don't have interest in either guy. One last note on Chubb. I mean, if we combine Ito Smith and Tevin Coleman's line from last week, or we look at what Carlos Hyde has put up in his last few starts for the Browns, I mean, realistically, Chubb could get 4 points. Not saying he will, but realistically, he could get 4 or 5 points. So yeah, I mean, there's just so many, like if this is going to be chalk, and okay. So let's move away from cash games. Okay. And if these guys are going to be chalk, we're talking tournaments and they're not clearly the best play and there's this many question marks. I think it's bad process in tournaments to be overweight on these guys. So if you're building one roster, I think it's bad process to lock in these guys. If you're building 10 rosters, I think it's bad process there. And I'm putting these guys on 8 or 9. I would rather lose because I was underweight on these guys than lose because I just sided with the field. So as far as tournaments go, I mean, I can't see at this point. And it's Friday, and this news came out like 3 hours ago. So, you know, I just started toying around with this. But so I'll update on the player grid if that thought changes. But right now I just can't see in tournaments justifying these guys as chalk.
No, I think
especially
that
when we go up – like, I want to talk about Tariq Cohen,
yeah,
who I very much think his usage has been game plan specific against the really slow Buccaneers linebackers, then against the really slow Dolphins linebackers. I don't think this is an every week thing, but the Patriots linebackers are so slow and they can't cover at all. And it's not like they can just focus on Tariq Cohen, right? This team has Trey Burton, Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel. So they're going to have to play him straight up, and Tariq Cohen's going to play another 40-50% of snaps. Like this dude, his floor is the same as these other guys. Obviously, he costs a little bit more, but his floor is the same as the other guys, and he has legit 25-30-point upside. Every roster of mine this week has started with him and David Njoku on the roster. And if I move them off to kind of move around things and see what else fit, I ended up back on them before saving the roster. So somebody like Tariq Cohen is probably going to be, what, 8% owned. That's just a
more than me. Yeah, I think a little bit more. I mean, I think a lot of people think he's a good player. I wrote about him today, and even like Matthew Berry like led his love hate column today.
Come on, bro, leave him alone.
With Tariq Cohen.
I want to talk about him. But yeah, like if people all pivot down to Kerryon Johnson, like I might play Kerryon and Tariq Cohen together, but if everybody pivots down to Kerryon Johnson and Nick Chubb, there's a ton of upside here, just 5,100. So, you know, we're talking about trying to get 20 or 30 points from your players. Here's a guy to look at. And bro, my running back list is so short after these guys we've talked about. It's like, we've almost gone through everything except these couple high-priced guys.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the mid-range, a little bit off the board before we get to those high-priced guys. TJ Yeldon is someone I know you liked last week. Carlos Hyde is not expected to play in this game, so it will again be the TJ Yeldon show, backed up by Jamaal Charles, this time against a Houston defense, which has struggled badly. Do you have an interest in Yeldon at 6,400?
Yeah, I do have interest in Yeldon. I have interest in Chris Thompson. Those are the two guys in that price range that I could see going to. Chris Thompson, obviously, betting on game flow, but there's nobody else for the Redskins to throw the ball to right now against the same Cowboys team we were targeting last week with Yeldon. Yeldon, same thing, right? Really good run defense, so we're looking at probably 50, 60 rushing yards, but then you just hope the catches pile up, hope he scores a touchdown. Yeah, I mean, pricing is driving me away from, just because it's so important to me. Like, it's so important to me this week to get two of these three high-priced guys. And then there's so many cheap guys that I think I can get, you know, target 15 to 20, 30 points from, that I won't end up in this mid-range. But if like roster construction were different for me, or if you're taking a different approach, I think Yeldon's fine.
Let's get to a couple high-priced guys here that I think are going to be extremely popular, like 30-plus percent owned in tournaments. That's Ezekiel Elliott, 8,100. You know you're going to get 20-plus touches. Redskins have been extremely bad in adjusted line yards. On the defensive line, obviously the Cowboys' offensive line I think has regressed, but they can still win this matchup for sure against the Redskins. Defensive line, I think Zeke is going to be very popular, even though I think Redskins will play better this week and maybe win the game. And then also Todd Gurley is going to be likely the most owned player on the entire slate by a healthy margin at 9,800 against the 49ers. How do you feel about Zeke? And I assume that you're on Todd Gurley.
Yeah, those are – so I like Gurley over Zeke. And I think I like – so the other guy up here is Adam Thielen. Mm-hmm. And you can actually now with Chubb – like if you like Chubb and you want to go Chubb and Ratley – and I would have to leave Tariq Cohen off my roster. You could fit all three guys, but I think with an optimal roster, you can fit two. Right now, I'm leaning Thielen over, like Thielen Gurley over Zeke. But yeah, basically, this is a week where, you know, we've had most weeks, there's five, six, seven guys who could get you 30 points. These are the three guys who really have a strong shot at it. And so I think you want to have two of these. We can make whatever game theory cases for fading them, but at least two of them would have to fail. At least two of them would have to fall shy of 20 points. I don't see it. It's likelier on Zeke just because his pass game role goes up and down. Volume concerns in this matchup against a Washington that really needs volume.
Yeah, and on Zeke, I think the floor is lower just for overall offensive stability. Like, it's not out of the question that the Cowboys go to Washington and score 6 points. Like, they suck. You know what I mean? Like, it's definitely possible.
Yeah, that's something that I've been trying to get better at this year and learn from you, is worrying more about how good an offense is as a whole too, not just the matchup. And so, yeah, that would be the other concern there. But, like, we're not talking down Zeke, right? Like, he's a great play this week. Just if we're choosing among these three, that's been my thought process. That's where he's finished third for me. And I've been thinking through it for 2 days now, and that's kind of where I'm at. But I really like Zeke. I really like Gurley, and I don't see a reason to, quote, fade them. You know, like, if I don't play Zeke, it's because I'm playing Thielen instead, not because I'm expecting a bad game from Zeke.
Okay, off the board, if you wanted to get frisky, a couple guys that are on my list, Christian McCaffrey. Already mentioned how I did not think that he'd be able to run the ball whatsoever. However, there are a few running backs or players in the slate are candidate to catch 10 balls. in a game and also get 15 to 20 carries. So Christian McCaffrey will be extremely lightly owned. He is in play for me, at least, if I was playing a lot of lineups. And LeSean McCoy is a guy I never thought that I would talk about, but it's not a great matchup. But LeSean McCoy looks healthy. And as crazy as it sounds, Derek Anderson might actually be able to stabilize this offense more than Josh Allen or Nathan Peterman. And don't get me wrong, Derek Anderson is a stone disaster, but he, I think, can stabilize the offense more than those other two guys. And for those reasons, you have a LeSean McCoy at 5,600 who plays in the pass game, who gets the goal line work against the Colts. I doubt I would.
What goal line work?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and I actually think the Colts defense is way better than people realize too. So it's probably not a play that I would make considering how many lineups that I end up making each week. But if I was making a lot, maybe LeSean McCoy would sneak in there. Any thoughts on those guys or anybody else off the board?
I like the McCaffrey one. Obviously his likeliest scenario here is a disappointing game, but like you said, with that many touches, you know, this dude has one touchdown in the season. That's kind of why I'm not on him, because he's going to need a score in this spot. In this tough matchup where it's going to be hard to run the ball. But yeah, if going off the board saying who could get you 30 points at low, like who could outscore Gurley and Zeke at low ownership, McCaffrey could. And then LeSean McCoy was on my list earlier in the week. I really don't want to target guys on this offense, but I do think he's a good play. Should get pass game work. Obviously is still a stud with the ball in his hands.
All right. Peyton Barber, Corey Clement, anything else off the board?
No. And I mean, you can make a case for these guys, right? But when we're talking about what else is available,
yeah,
they're not guys that I'm going to.
Let's move to the wide receiver position. And we might as well start at the top. We've alluded to him a few times before. Adam Thielen is on pace to set virtually every NFL record at the wideout position. However, he's still reasonably priced at 8,600. Like if Antonio Brown was putting up these numbers, he'd be like 10.5K. And we've talked about before how the DK pricing algorithm certainly factors in ownership, and Adam Thielen has not carried the same kind of ownership that a guy like Antonio Brown or Julio Jones would if he was putting up these numbers. Buster Skrine will be out for the Jets. They've been getting abused in the slot. I agree with you that, it's not even a question that Adam Thielen is the best raw equity play at the wide receiver position on this slate. I don't know. Is there anybody at wide receiver, regardless of price, you could even hold a candle to Thielen?
No, and that's what's so strange about this week with everything. If we played out this slate 100 times, Thielen would be the highest. Like all the variance that comes into play with all the wide receivers on a slate, like Thielen would still probably be the highest scoring guy 40, 50% of the time. This dude is in such a great spot. He's used so heavily that, and from what you're saying with, you know, the popularity of Zeke and Gurley, sounds like, you can't fit all three on a great roster, in my opinion. So it sounds like Thielen's going to be
a little bit less.
Not overlooked, but a little bit underowned, right?
Yeah, I think Thielen's somewhere in the high 20s, and then Gurley pushing 40, and Zeke probably somewhere in the 30s would be my guess.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I really like the Vikings passing attack. Really like Cousins, Thielen, and Diggs. But Thielen is another week where he's just a moneymaker, in my opinion, and a guy that I'm comfortable kind of starting my rosters with. A lot of times I like to start from the bottom so that I'm not taking bad value, but there's so much value this week that kind of like last week with James Conner, I can prioritize which high-priced guy I want and then move forward from there. Thielen's that one of the two high-priced guys this week.
So one of my favorite players on the slate, and the problem with playing Thielen, I think for a lot of people, will be one of my favorite plays on the slate is Robert Woods kicking into the slot to fill Cooper Kupp's role. Cooper Kupp has had this massive red zone role. He's also seeing, you know, 6 to 8 targets per game every week, and now he's going to be out. And I don't think Josh Reynolds will command nearly the target share that Cooper Kupp did. So we have a situation where Robert Woods has this amazing matchup against San Francisco defense. He'll avoid Richard Sherman. By the way, Richard Sherman's on the injury report, but everybody's on the injury report for San Francisco. I mean, they have been so bad at the safety spot, at the corner spots. I think the way you beat this team is through the air. So to me, Robert Woods at 7K is so enticing. I really don't want to pass on Robert Woods. Do you have any talk me off the ledge on Robert Woods?
No, man, let's go down together. Let's hope our parachutes open. I've got these three guys, Zeke, Gurley, and Thielen, as the top three. And then I've got Woods as like half. You know, like he's not Thielen, Zeke, and Gurley this week, but we've got 3.5 or 3.75 guys that you just really want to fit. I've actually been able to fit Woods with the guys that with Cohen, Gurley, and Tariq Cohen and Thielen, and like get this roster that I want with Woods. Obviously, if you move off of Gurley or off of Thielen and go down to Zeke, it makes it even easier. So I think that you can easily fit three of these guys. And yeah, Woods, like realistically, what's likely to happen is Josh Reynolds just runs routes at Richard Sherman all day on the right side of the field. Same thing that the Packers do with Equanimeous St. Brown. And then, you know, we just see targets going to Cooks and Woods. Woods bumps into the slot a lot more with Kupp out. So ton to love in this spot for Robert Woods. Wouldn't surprise me if he posts the top score in the slate, right? But his chances of doing so are lower than these other three guys. So the big question for me will be, you know, do I sacrifice a little bit at the lower end to get in Woods along with two of these other guys, or, you know, do I leave Woods on the table? Do you like Woods more than any of these other three?
Do you like more than Zeke? No, but I think that Zeke makes for an interesting tournament fit just for the reason that I mentioned about the overall offensive stability going on the road and the division and all that. But I think, you know, if it came down to it and I was you and I had to come down from Tariq Cohen to Chubb or Kerryon or whatever in order to fit Robert Woods, that would be something that I would do, because as we go down in pricing, well, first of all, let's talk about Woods versus Brandon Cook, because I think a lot of people are going to be like, well, I like Brandon Cooks too. And I actually like Brandon Cooks too. I think he's a really good play. Also, I think the role for Woods in the slot will be a little bit better, but do you have a strong feeling between Woods and Cooks?
Yeah, they're both great plays. Like you said, Woods, just the role gives him a higher floor, right? I mean, if we're just talking ceiling, either guy, but, and that's the thing with Zeke is if we're talking like Gurley, if he gets 20 points, we're all going to be disappointed, which is insane. If Thielen gets 20 points, we'll be disappointed. If Zeke gets 20 points, it's like, yeah, that happens with Zeke, which is why I'm comfortable moving off. And I think if Woods gets, like if Cooks gets 13 or 14 points, we're disappointed. If Woods gets under 18 points, we're probably disappointed. So that floor is just a little bit higher on him with his role. And I, just for the record, I completely disagree about the moving off Tariq Cohen thing. I just think this guy's going to smash this week, but obviously different opinions there.
Before we go down, Jarvis Landry was someone that jumped out at me earlier in the week. DraftKings, like, as much as Jarvis Landry has struggled, they have not adjusted his price whatsoever. He's 7,300. I noticed FanDuel did adjust his price. Jarvis Landry is like free on FanDuel. I'm not saying he's like a must play or anything on FanDuel given how bad he struggled, but if you like Baker Mayfield, I assume you like Jarvis Landry. It's just really hard to fit this price on Jarvis Landry on DraftKings specifically.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time figuring out, outside of Njoku, and we'll talk about him in a bit and why I like him so much. Outside of Njoku, I'm having a hard time seeing exactly where these points are going on the Browns. And so that just makes it scary to pay up for Jarvis Landry. I don't think it'll surprise us if he has a big game, but, man, it would take some balls to play him over Robert Woods, right? Yeah. I mean, in this position, the way he's played in this offense, it would be difficult to pull the trigger on that.
Let's move into this 4K range, because I think that's the range a lot of people are wondering about. I love Taylor Gabriel also. He's being used, like his ADOT is actually more than Odell Beckham, Kenny Galladay. Like so many people think he's just like a gadget guy. And I rarely get excited about 165-pound guys who are like 5'9". But I do think it's a really good spot for Taylor Gabriel. I think Marquise Goodwin is a better play than maybe people are giving it credit for. 23% target share against the Packers last week. I know that his skill set doesn't necessarily fit perfectly with C.J. Beathard, but he is playing that X role in Kyle Shanahan's offense, which has been so productive. And as I mentioned, Marcus Peters has been struggling so bad. We also have the slot guys, Jermaine Kearse, with the Jets wideout so banged up, and the Vikings a little bit banged up in the secondary. Xavier Rhodes won't go into the slot. And we also have Willie Snead, who you mentioned. I actually think I'd have Willie Snead last out of those four guys. But out of those four guys, who do you like, and any other thoughts on those on that range?
Yeah, love Taylor Gabriel, and you nailed all the guys that I'm looking at down here. love Taylor Gabriel for the reasons you mentioned. It feels a little scary to play him and Cohen together, but I may pull the trigger there, especially Stephon Gilmore should be covering Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson's a little banged up. We know that Trey Burton's role is kind of this 4-6 target role, so it seems it sets up well. Khalil Mack's banged up, sets up well for the Patriots to score points. Harder for the Patriots to run the ball, so again, leans toward the pass, score points, and then sets up well for Gabriel to see another 7, 8, 9 targets. As far as Goodwin, it's the same, like Goodwin, DeSean Jackson, any of these guys who can score from anywhere on the field become so valuable in tournaments, even in bad matchups. So I'm fine with Goodwin. He's not high on my list, but any of these guys who can score from anywhere on the field, I'm good with. I probably like Curse a little bit more than Snead, but I've had a lot of rosters where that $100 makes a difference and kind of,
oh God, really?
Right. And the thing with Snead, all right, I'm going to give you some narratives. And so we don't play narrative. We don't play players because of narratives. We play players because they're in a good matchup, but narratives help, right? If they're in a good matchup, it was Snead's birthday this week. Snead's going to be a captain this week against the Saints. Snead's parents are both coming to the game. They've been planning it since before the season.
Pissed off at the Saints.
Harbaugh is a player's coach, and Snead's had done everything that Crabtree's done this year except had a smaller red zone role. And so it makes sense for them to maybe scheme him one. It's not like they're going out of their way to get a bad player a target. You know, it's like this is a dude who can catch the ball in traffic, hold on when he gets hit hard over the middle. So seems like they'll get him at least one red zone target. Worst case, he's been getting 10 to 12 points every week. And best case, he scores and gets you about 20. Curse, obviously, with Enunwa out, Pryor out. I liked Pryor more than Curse before he was out because they really like that big body over the middle. But, a lot of wide receiver screens are going to go to Curse. Probably some jet sweep action. They just get it to him on some quick passes there. He'll have the ball in his hands quite a bit. So good floor, good ceiling on Curse as well.
Let's talk about the 3K range. I think Josh Reynolds will have more ownership than Damian Ratley, but I kind of tend to agree that Ratley is the better play. I mean, I think Josh Reynolds could be okay. He's probably a better player than people give him credit for, but certainly the matchup for Ratley is pretty ideal, and he played almost every snap last week. And if they are watching at all and doing any self-scouting, he should be the number two wideout ahead of Antonio Callaway. Ratley was unproductive in college, which I think is a concern, and is still a rookie wide receiver, which is still a concern on the road. But tell me about Ratley.
Yeah, it's interesting too when you look back at like a player's journey to get to the NFL, because so many of these guys, like they're always in, they're in these camps from a young age, and they're getting scouted from a young age. And Ratley went to a smaller high school, just like he got no attention in high school, was a super productive player in high school, didn't play college football his first year out of high school, was just a student at, I think it was Blinn Community College, and had tried out for the team, made the team, and then decided to just focus on academics. And then after like that fall, he was like, why am I not playing football, right? Went and played, him and Dede Westbrook teamed up at Blinn Community College. Then he went to A&M. You know, it's like this dude's path to the NFL just wasn't a straight line. And it makes sense that he's a sixth-round pick. I mean, he's raw. He's not super polished. But this dude's 6'2", 4.45 speed. Callaway has 4.41 speed. That flea flicker that he dropped in the end zone last week, that was designed to go to him. He caught another pass on the downfield pass on the one-yard line. They're going to take deep shots with him. And they're scheming him the ball. He was the first read on probably 5 or 6 of his targets last week. So it's not like it was fluky that he got 8 targets. So if this dude gets 6 to 9 targets against the Bucs and he's better at catching the football than Antonio Callaway, I think he's a sharp play at 3,600. I definitely like him more than Reynolds, right? I mean, I don't think that the Rams are scheming Reynolds the ball. I think Reynolds is going to be more like Laquon Treadwell. He's going to run into some targets because the other guys are covered. Mm-hmm. But Ratley's actually going to be scheming the ball, and this team passes so much that I like him more than Reynolds. You have a different take on that or anything else to add on Ratley?
No, I think that makes perfect sense. I think anytime you play a sixth-round rookie who barely played in college on the road is going to be thin. But, I've definitely heard of worse plays. He's certainly on my list. One guy we didn't mention who's healthy now, and it's obviously a really bad matchup, but T.Y. Hilton at home, I know he'll see a lot of Tre'Davious White. I know Bills have been very good against the pass. I know T.Y. Hilton's coming off of a hamstring injury, which is scary, but I think we should at least mention T.Y. Hilton while he's 6,200 because that is a very low price considering the volume that Andrew Luck is throwing at him. And Andrew Luck's on pace to set the NFL record for pass attempts in a season.
Yeah, T.Y. Hilton and one other guy who's healthy too is Josh Gordon. Mm-hmm. And so T.Y. Hilton, I think I've kind of crossed him off my list at his price, not from a floor perspective, but from an upside perspective, as in I'm not moving around stuff to get him just because with the Bills forcing teams to flatten out their routes, it's hard to turn things upfield and get those big yards after catch plays. That's my only thought on Hilton, but the Bills actually allow a league average catch rate. So if Hilton gets his 10 targets, you're still looking at 7 catches. He's going to have a productive game. A monster game is going to be tough to come by. But, man, if he scores a touchdown or just breaks one long play, yeah, he's a slate winner. And Josh Gordon, I don't have the exact stat off the top of my head, but the Bears have allowed, I think, the third or fourth most receiving yards to wide receivers. They're so tough against tight ends and running backs that it opens up a lot for wide receivers, especially downfield passing is where they've been worst. So Josh Gordon is pretty interesting this week after playing most of the snaps last week.
Yeah, Josh Gordon tied for the team lead in routes run in that Sunday night game. A couple other guys on my list off the board. John Brown has one of the best possible matchups. I mean, the Saints have just been getting lit up on deep balls. Obviously, that's what John Brown does. Kenny Galladay is always going to be a bet on talent kind of play, even at 6K. I think Alshon Jeffrey can win against James Bradbury pretty easily. We saw what Cole Beasley did to the Jaguars. I don't think I'd end up playing Kiki Kute, but it's at least worth acknowledging that he has the best matchup. And then if you think DeAndre Hopkins can win on the perimeter against the Jaguars, DraftKings has done a matchup adjustment down to 6,900 on DeAndre Hopkins. Any thoughts on those guys or anybody else off the board?
Yeah, to speed things up, I basically agree on everything you said on those guys. It stood out to me how frequently in the highest dollar tournaments, how frequently people are using underpriced slot receivers against the Jaguars. Most weeks it hasn't paid off. Last week with Cole Beasley, we saw it pay off. Tyler Patman is obviously the weakest link there, so the thinking is just more targets are going to go there, right? Obviously, Kiki Kute has the upside. Alshon, I was much higher on him earlier in the week and dug into a bunch of stuff last night. Dude didn't have a single 100-yard game all of last year. It all comes down to the touchdowns. And the way that players have beaten the Panthers is on crossing routes and then yards after the catch, which we know Alshon Jeffrey is one of the worst in the league in yards after the catch. Panthers have actually been really good at stopping receiving touchdowns, targets in the end zone. So that's why I'll be off Alshon. I think he has a really high floor. There was some stuff that worked out in pricing. I really wanted to like him more, but I think like a blow-up game is going to be tough to come by. So those are my more in-depth thoughts on guys in that range.
Last question. We talked about that 4K range. We didn't mention Chris Godwin. Would he be a step below for you, those guys in the 4K range?
I don't know, man. I don't know what to do with Godwin. I don't know what to do with a guy who's getting a 45% snap share, but still 7 targets a game. But yeah, like last week, Chester Rogers. So I ended up playing Rogers over Godwin. It ended up being basically a wash, but I liked Godwin more on a per play basis. It's just scary when you know he's not on the field for half the snap. So yeah, I mean, Godwin sets up best in this matchup. So I like it again. Just tough to pull the trigger compared to some of these other guys.
All right, at the tight end position, we might as well get right to the chalk. It is, of course, David Njoku. Baker Mayfield has targeted him at an extremely high rate, far higher rate than Tyrod Taylor did, which I think was somewhat predictable given how careful Tyrod is throwing the ball over the middle of the field. David Njoku's price has gone to 4,200. He's no longer in that kind of 35, 38 range where he was for a while, but I still think he'll be the most owned tight end on the slate by a pretty wide margin. Do you see any reason to get off David Njoku?
None at all. There are several good tight ends on this slate, but there are three that are just so much better on paper than anyone else, and I'd be fine playing two of them. It's Ertz, Njoku, and Kittle for me. But now Njoku, you know, you mentioned the targets and then the way that they're using. So with this Tampa 2 defense, everything's about running through the zone, crossing routes and slants and drag routes, and that's not how they've been using Jarvis Landry. It is how they've been using Njoku. They're lining him up in the slot and running him over the middle of the field. Obviously, he's still getting his seam routes and all that, but he's kind of running more like a slot receiver. And with these targets, man, it just sets up so well for him. It's going to be hard for him to fail. And it's going to be hard for any of these like 5-6 target tight ends to really have a shot at passing him. So I was hoping he would, I mean, I didn't expect him. I was hoping he'd somehow go overlooked, but yeah, Njoku is just a sick play this week. And I guess you can make a case for playing Kittle or Ertz over him, but I would be likely to make a case for playing Njoku and Kittle, or Njoku maybe play Ertz over Robert Woods in that same price range to grab some differentiation. You have any tight ends besides those three that you think can outscore at least two of those guys?
Unlikely, but in theory, Jordan Reed should see a lot of targets. Paul Richardson is going to miss this game. Jamison Crowder is going to miss this game. Chris Thompson is banged up. I think Chris Thompson ended up playing, but he's certainly banged up. The problem is, like, Jordan Reed has not been featured whatsoever, and Alex Smith is just so bad. So, yeah, I mean, it sucks to be in this spot with Jordan Reed, but it is what it is. Certainly, like, Kittle, I want your take on Gronk, because this has to be, like, a career-low price for Gronk at 6K. It's an awful, awful matchup. Chicago has been dominant against tight ends. And I think Gronk, I don't know, man. He just looks like he's lumbering out there. Maybe he's just like old and is like accumulation of injuries, but to my untrained eye, he's like lumbering around out there. He doesn't look like the athletic specimen he once did. So I'm not going to play Gronk, but the 6K price tag did stick out to me.
Yeah, Gronk's getting ready for that action superhero career that's coming up next. He's going to be so miscast playing like an action star. He's such a goofy looking dude. And he's always smiling. I think obviously you mentioned the matchup, and then Marcus Cannon, left or right tackle for the Patriots, is out. Just makes sense for the Patriots to use Gronk to chip on Khalil Mack every play. That's something the Patriots, I mean, we got to remember Gronk's also an elite blocker, and they want him in the pass game, but it's not like they're going to keep him in the block, but he's going to have responsibilities on Khalil Mack, which will hurt his upside as well. I really like the call on Jordan Reed and on Gronk. Like, if we're not going to say who are the good tight end plays, but we're going to say who could actually outscore two of Njoku, Kittle, and Ertz, I think those are the two guys. I won't play either of them, but you make good points there.
Only other guy would be Greg Olsen, who played on 59 out of 60 snaps last week. I don't think he's going to see more than 4, 5, 6 targets is the problem. But Greg Olsen certainly looks healthy out there. The Panthers think he's healthy. So if you think this game turns into a shootout, which would surprise me, but if you did, Greg Olsen could be in play. Anything else? I don't know. Eric Ebron.
Wouldn't that just be tilting if Olsen puts up 30 points and he's 2% owned and we've got like everything sets up for these guys? Those are those multi-entry plays that people smash on, and somebody like Olsen. Again, it's like I said with DeSean Jackson and Marquise Goodwin, it's all about targeting upside when you're going off the board. You don't want to go off the board on somebody that's going to get you 10 or 12 points. Olsen has 25, 30 point upside.
Let's move to defense, where I kind of think that the most popular one, it's really hard to project defensive ownership, but I kind of think that the most popular one will be the Colts at 3,300 home against Derek Anderson. I mean, people have visions of Derek Anderson throwing pick sixes like crazy last time he was in the NFL. So I think they'll be popular. I think that maybe the Ravens, I don't even know. I don't know if people use the Ravens against the Saints, but considering how many points the Ravens put up last week and considering how much we project Drew Brees to throw in a football game, the Ravens are on 2,400 is going to stick out to a lot of people. I don't know, man. I don't see a lot at defense this week. I guess you can make a case for the Eagles at 2,600. Certainly Vikings and Jaguars if you want to spend up.
Yeah, I kind of rely on you to tell me what to do here. So thanks. One of my regrets last week was I ended up on a team on Saturday that used the Bills defense at 2,200 and just made everything else work, and would have outscored all three of my teams if I'd gone with it. I think that the Bills defense is just a lot better than people are giving them credit for. And Andrew Luck's not mistake prone, and this quick out offense doesn't take a lot of sacks, but they throw so much that it opens opportunities for mistakes. So the bill, what I've been doing is it's been culture bills, and that's a 1K difference, and it depends on pricing. So kind of like last week, it was Matt Ryan and Jameis Winston, and I was fine going to one or the other. I prefer the Colts, but yeah, I think that the Bills could make a dent for us as well. Yeah. And then Jags are really the only other team on my list. Just Deshaun Watson takes so many sacks, so many turnovers. It's a get right spot for the Jags. And that's what I have. I haven't found anything else I really feel comfortable with. But, you know, it would be great if we could find one of these 20-point defenses one week, because I keep getting these 80th, 85th percentile teams where my defense is getting 2 to 5 points. You know, it's like you hit on one of these defenses, it changes everything.
Oh, yeah, big time. Eagles, any interest in the Eagles? Dolphins, maybe?
Dolphins get that heat down in Miami. I mean, I don't know. You know, like, what are people doing with defense? People are getting 21 points in the Kansas City Chiefs and stuff. Like, we're over here talking about the good defenses, the Colts and Bills. And, yeah, I don't know. Play good defense is what I think against bad quarterbacks.
All right. Let's move to everybody's favorite portion of the program. It is, of course, the stacks. They haven't listened to a word that we've said. They fast-forwarded, and they're going to put this into the Millie Maker, and they're going to expect to win $1 million. And if not, they're going to ask you for a lifetime refund of their one-week season subscription. So why don't you give them a chalk stack or a contrarian stack, and then I'll go, and then you can go, and then I'll go.
I'm going to start out with, I guess this will be contrarian, just because it's not something that people are going to be on this week. Super good play. Everybody would agree on that. Ownership just going to flow a different way, and that is loading up on the best, like, narrow distribution of targets in the NFL. Kirk Cousins to Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. These guys are getting 77% of the team's air yards, which is insane. When we talk about, like, the Lions receivers or Rams receivers, the three combined for 88% of the team's air yards. To get 77% from two guys is nuts. Would not be surprising if Diggs, Thielen, Cousins all go for around 30 points this week, and nobody's going to have that full pairing. So that would be contrarian.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even mention Diggs in the wide receiver portion, but I wrote about him in my article today as kind of a leverage play. I mean, Diggs was taken out of the game, at least in part, by Patrick Peterson last week, and I love to target guys the week after they face Patrick Peterson or some other elite matchup. I mean, this is a great spot to jump back on Diggs. I wish he was a little bit cheaper off of Thielen, because then you can make a case to play Diggs and cash a little bit more. But yeah, I think that's an awesome, awesome stack. For my contrarian stack, something off the board, I am going to go with one Cameron Newton and one Christian McCaffrey in an effort to possibly get all the touchdowns from Carolina in a game I actually think that they will play well in a really good matchup against this funneling Eagles defense that nobody's going to be on CMC, and very few people, relatively few people, will be on Cam Newton despite the matchup, despite his rushing upside. So it's just like unique talents from both these guys. Cam's rushing, Christian McCaffrey's pass catching in what I think is a reasonable matchup. I wish the game was not in Philly, but it is what it is, and that'll keep the ownership down.
For my contrarian one, my chalk one, I'm going to go Baker Mayfield to David Njoku. I really like this spot. I really like picking on the Tampa defense. I think that we're going to see a lot from the Browns offense this week, and I'll feel comfortable rolling with the two of them together.
All right, for my chalk one, I don't know how chalk it'll be, but I'll say Jared Goff to Robert Woods. Bigger impact than I think people realize with Cooper Kupp not playing in this game. Like, it's going to make a big difference for this offense. I don't even mind playing Gurley in that stack too. Like, all the touchdowns for the Rams is never a bad idea when they can score five touchdowns for sure in a game. All right. Any housekeeping, any 1 week season notes before we sign off?
No, just a reminder. So I'm going to wait till tomorrow afternoon to send out another tweet about the 1 week season survivor contest on Fantasy Draft. $5 entry, 5 weeks, top 70% move on each week. So it's a pretty fun contest to be in. So any of you watching, I think there's about 300 entries left. So I'll give you till Saturday afternoon before I promote it again on Twitter. And that gives you a chance to grab a spot in there. And then also just really enjoyed doing the show, Adam. Ton of respect for you, man. And Yeah, usually I wait till the end of the season to say that, but I want to throw that out there this week. And now I'll say something mean to you at the end of the season. But a lot of fun hanging out each week and picking your brain and learning stuff from you. Always a blast.
You know what? We let them down. They wanted you to come out here and say you're playing Nick Chubb and Duke Johnson together this week. That's the brand.
I know, man. The cheat code thing is supposed to be if you feel like the floor is like 25 points and the ceiling is 40 on two guys. The floor is not 25 points. Like, come on. These guys might get you 12 points this week. Maybe they get you 25. I'm leaving this cheat code alone.
All right.
Play Tariq Cohen. Forget the cheat code. Tariq Cohen's the cheat code.
Good. Okay. I like Tariq Cohen. All right. That is going to do it for another episode of the quote-unquote expert, quote-unquote roundtable, a.k.a. the square table. For Jerry, for JM, for his cat, I'm Adam. Good luck, everybody.